This is the first in a series of two podcasts on methodology in human-computer interaction research. And when I talk about methodology, what I mean is a system of methods that we use to conduct research in human-computer interaction research. If you think about what that means, if it's a system, that means there are perhaps multiple. There's some mechanism through which we use to guide the decision of which methods to use, so on and so forth. And so if we take a look at the overview today, what I want to talk about are essentially these four topics. I'm going to do the first three today, and then I'll do the last one on the second podcast. So first I'll be kind of talking about why we actually do evaluation in human-computer interaction research and what evaluation actually entails, sort of the scope of what that means, what methods there are in terms of conducting human-computer interaction research. I'll just touch on a brief small set of what these might be. And then I'll talk about why we actually need to use different methods and why sometimes we use multiple methods to actually go about doing this. And what I'll save for next time is how we can actually go about comparing these methods. So if we try to answer the question of why we actually do evaluation in human-computer interaction research, there's a whole bunch of reasons. And what it really comes down to is your perspective on what research actually means. So as a designer of systems, as somebody who's putting together requirements for systems, trying to figure out how the system should actually behave or what the system should actually do, we actually think about a user-centered iterative design process, and evaluation plays a part of that in multiple different phases. As a researcher, as many of you are, we use evaluation as a mechanism to develop a knowledge base, so to derive sort of generalizable knowledge about how certain things behave, how certain people behave given certain system constraints, things like that. If you are a customer of systems, that is, you are a customer that is trying to buy some computer systems, you want to use evaluation as a mechanism to select among different systems. How do people perform given different systems? And perhaps you're trying to find a system where people perform the best. If you're a manager, you're perhaps trying to figure out perhaps same kinds of things, right? Does the system actually fulfill the needs that we have when we are actually deploying the system among my employees? If you're a marketer, you're interested in HCI research because it gives you a way of actually building a case for a product. That is, you can say, people can actually complete tasks using my system 50% faster because there are fewer button clicks. Right? So there's a whole bunch of different reasons. In this class, what we're going to do is we're going to take the perspective of designers and researchers disregard kind of more or less the other ones. So if we think about why we do evaluation in HCI, as I said, as a designer, you're concerned about this because evaluation is part of the iterative design process. And this is essentially a three-phase process that you go through multiple times iteratively, where you're doing some evaluation of a context, perhaps. Maybe you're doing an evaluation of a prototype you already have. And then based on the findings from that evaluation, right, you actually go about perhaps implementing some design changes or new designs. Come up with a new set of designs. And then you go ahead and implement some of those. And then given that implementation or that new prototype, you're going to evaluate. Did we actually address the problem that we thought we were going to address, right? And then you go through that process over and over again. So in this iterative design process, we can think of there being maybe four stages, but you might go through this multiple times, right? So in the initial stage, pre-design, you're actually trying to understand what's going on in the context. You're trying to understand what people's problems are, right? So imagine this would have been, let's suppose you're trying to design a library checkout system, right? Before the library checkout systems that we have today, right? What you would have done is gone in and figure out what is it that people actually do? What is the real world context and the constraints that they're operating in? What is the task that they're trying to accomplish and what do they think about them? What does the system actually need in terms of functionality, right? So what you want to develop from this early stage evaluation, which is sort of, think of it as an expedition where you're trying to understand a situation, right? This kind of evaluation helps you develop an understanding of what the key tasks are, what the required functionality is, contextual factors, right? When is it that the system is busy? When is it going to need help? A description of the work practices that are happening, organizational practices, what those constraints might be, key requirements, and different kinds of users, right? Perhaps you come to understand that students operate the system and need the system in different ways than, say, young children. Given that early stage evaluation, now you're going to go build something, right? So you implement something, and once you have something implemented, perhaps it's a early stage type of system. Now you want to know, you know, are you actually getting at kind of what people need, right? So here you're doing some early you're trying to evaluate choices of initial design ideas, right? So perhaps you've mocked up some of these designs as paper prototypes, perhaps. Maybe some brainstorming exercises, that sort of thing. And so what you're trying to do now is you're trying to go back to the people that you think are going to be using your system and asking them, hey, does this actually fulfill your needs? Does the way that we think about this system actually meet your expectations, right? So this kind of evaluation actually produces user reaction to design, validation or invalidation of ideas, so we can actually say, okay, actually this type of design actually makes no sense, and a list of conceptual problem areas, right, conceptual bugs. So perhaps the way we've thought about it is, just the wrong way, right, that actually users think of that problem as being different than what the way we've thought about it. And in this case, you know, the library checkout system probably, as an example, doesn't work out as well. But there are certainly many cases where, how a system designer interprets the needs of the users is very different than how the user interprets kind of their needs, right? So if you've used a system like PeopleSoft, you can understand that, in fact, the way they think about the system is actually very different than how we think about it, right? And what this helps you produce, again, is, you know, perhaps a new set of design ideas, right? Because you have a better sense of what it might be. So given that knowledge, you're probably moving on to an iterative design stage where you're actually starting to actually build something that is, you know, perhaps low-fi or medium-fi prototypes, perhaps with some basic functionality. And here you're trying to iteratively refine or fine-tune the design that you've actually picked. And you're actually looking for usability bugs. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to bring people in and say, actually try this thing out and see if you run into problems, right? And problems there, as you saw earlier, might be that they actually can't figure out how to complete certain tasks because of the design, or the way that the design is actually put together actually makes some things invisible, right? So this kind of evaluation produces user reaction to design, validation, and list of problem areas that are actually bugs, right? You might actually develop some variation on design ideas where you're like, okay, well, actually that kind of design doesn't make any sense, right? So if we think about, here's a very simple one, right? We talked about the real phone example from IBM. Just as simple as, where does this icon live, right? Does it live under a folder called real phone, or does it live under a folder called IBM real phone, right? It made it difficult for somebody to find. Once we've kind of put together a system that we've deployed and we're actually sending out to market, then we want to actually try to figure out actually whether we did a good job, right? So you can actually do acceptance tests here, where you bring in people and you try to see whether or not we delivered what we said we would. So you can actually verify that we meet expected performance criteria. That is, that people can complete tasks in the time that we say they can. You might actually be trying to figure out ease of learning, usability, users' attitudes towards things, times, errors, that sort of stuff, right? A very common mechanism to kind of sort of do this evaluation is to go ahead and talk to your phone support people. And these people are listening to problems that people are actually having out in the field with your system. And those people actually tell you, hey, you know, these are the places that your users or customers are actually having problems with the system. And so, in fact, you actually come up with a set of revisions, perhaps, that you need to change. You might come up with a set of effects, right? So if it's a system that is deployed within the context of an organization, you might actually see that the way that people conduct work actually changes. And you might be interested in the field. Do actually users perform the way that we expected them to? Or are they actually changing things altogether, right? This type of evaluation produces testable usability metrics and user reactions, Again, a set of validation or a list of problem areas and changes to original work practices and requirements as we understand it now. Right, so here's another, the next slide here is an image that basically captures this iterative process of evaluation. And it actually gives you a set of terms with which we can think about as methods, essentially, that people can use depending on the phase in which they're in. So I'm not going to linger on this image too much, but it should make some sense given what we've just talked about. So that's why you would conduct evaluation in those different phases as a designer. You might actually conduct evaluation as a researcher for different reasons, right? So you might be trying to produce generalized knowledge, right? Something that we understand kind of as generalized design principles, theories of human behavior. And there are two kinds of theories, right? There's explanatory theory, right, where we provide an explanation for what happens, or descriptive theory, right? There's also predictive theory, where we're able to say, given a set of preconditions, this is how people will behave. And so the question then is, you know, when we're doing this kind of development, can we actually validate these ideas or hypotheses? So if you have a predictive theory, you're actually saying, given these conditions, this is what I expect to see. And your job as a researcher in conducting an evaluation here is to demonstrate that, in fact, that theory, that predictive theory actually works out. And so evaluations here produce validated theories, principles, and perhaps guidelines about how things should actually be done. They produce evidence supporting or rejecting hypotheses, ideas, and visions. So generalized design theory is very useful, right? Because there are often situations where you're trying to put together a design or other people are trying to put together a design, and they may not have as much time to conduct evaluations about every single piece of minutia that they would like. And so if they have a theory that they can rely on, right, a set of design principles or a set of design guidelines, then they don't have to recreate these designs from scratch. This is one of the reasons why platforms have system guidelines that we need to be following, right? If we follow them, it reduces the burden on our users as they're trying to figure out how to make our systems work, right? So if you are building an application for OS X, there's a set of system design guidelines and platform design guidelines that you should be following. This is sometimes developed partially from a visual design perspective, but also perhaps some research, right? The Windows User Experience Design Guidelines provides a set of design guidelines that is based on user research that their user experience team has conducted. So just to quickly summarize, why do we do evaluation in HCI? We do this in part because we're actually trying to do design. So in fact, it's often the case that we do these things together, right? We do evaluation and design together. That evaluation tells us what we need to do in design. And then our designs actually suggest kind of ways that we actually conduct evaluation or things that we're curious about, right? We can use those evaluations as a critique. Or perhaps in the design process, we have a question. We're not sure if we should do one thing or another. And that evaluation can give us insight as to which design we should be picking. Of course, design and evaluation methods need to fit development constraints, whether that means budget, or resource, or time constraints. And so as part of that process, we need to decide which things should we actually be doing evaluations on. There are some things that it doesn't make any sense to bother doing an evaluation on, where there are other things where it actually really, really does matter, that we believe is going to matter, right? So you need to triage kind of all the questions that you have when putting together a design of a system. The purpose of these evaluations is to give quick approximate answers for design, right? So it's rare that we need really precise results. We just kind of need to be able to kind of create an informed guess as to which decision is better. So I've talked a little bit about why we do evaluation in HCI, and now I want to talk about some of the methods. And again, I'm just going to touch on a couple of these different methods. This is a very, very super high-level overview, and in fact, there are way more methods than this. But this will give you a sense of kind of the rough categories of evaluation that we see in HCI research. So how can we think about some methods? So I think the important thing is to think about how a method is defined, right? So it's a, what is a method? A method is a formalized set of procedures or tools that guide the structure and process of gathering and analyzing information. So I'm just going to deconstruct that a little bit. So it's a set of procedures, right? So a system of things that you're going to do, steps essentially, that guide you through the process of gathering information and deciding on how to analyze information. So what that means is kind of that information gathering is defined by your process, your method, right? So some methods will ask you to look for certain things where other methods will ask you to look for other things. And in fact, these methods are guided by sort of kind of how you think about truth and how you think about knowledge that needs to be gathered. And so in fact, these methods actually differ in really, really substantial ways. The theory behind them actually guides what you decide to actually choose to gather. And then as a consequence, how you actually analyze that information. So different methods do different things. Each method offers potential opportunities not available by other means. So, and each method has inherent limitations. So what we're going to see as we go through these methods, that they make sense for certain circumstances, and they don't make some sense for other circumstances. It just depends on your needs. So the kind of research that we're, the kind of method that we're going to focus on, at least in the lecture, in the podcast material that you're going to get in this class, is laboratory tests, just because they provide a nice kind of baseline standard upon which we can compare other methods. Not because it's the best, just because it performs a nice baseline standard. So in a lab test, this requires human subjects that act as end users. And what you're trying to do here is you're trying to bring people into your lab. You're trying to bring people into the office. You give them a set of tasks to complete with a system or a couple of systems. And then you're basically evaluating, their performance in some way. So experimental methodologies, right? Highly controlled observations and measurements to answer very specific questions. That is hypothesis testing. So perhaps what you're doing here is you're comparing people's performance using different keyboards, right? Maybe it's an ABC keyboard versus a QWERTY keyboard. And you're giving them a set of tasks, type out these sentences, basically. And there you're actually trying to compare, right? And it's an experimental method. Usability testing, more or less qualitative, but sometimes quantitative too. Where you're observing users performing tasks, usually with some system that you've built, and you're trying to discover usability bugs, right? Problems that they're encountering as they're using the system. So this actually requires pulling people from the outside and bringing them in. There are other kinds of evaluations that you can do, and these include interface inspection evaluations. So here, rather than bringing potential end users in or other users that represent end users, you actually do this with interface design professionals. And what you have them do is you give them a set of guidelines or you give them a set of tasks and you ask them to walk through these tasks using the system, and these people basically identify all the problems that they encounter. Usability heuristics are a mechanism through which you can do this. So usability heuristics are just a set of problems, a set of generalized problems that these experts are on the lookout for, right? So user interface consistency is one of these things. And so they're going through each page, basically. Is it consistent from one page to the next? And consistency is one of the heuristics, right? So there may be many heuristics. It just depends on your context. A walkthrough is similar to that, but you're actually having them trying to complete tasks and asking them to be on the lookout for certain kinds of usability bugs. So it's an inspection in the sense that we're not getting end users in, and we're just having somebody inspect the system, right? So already you can see that there are some differences between lab tests and interface inspections, right? That who is it that we're bringing in? What is it that we're looking for? What is it that we're asking them to do, right? There are field studies. This is where you're trying to do something in the field. So it's not in your lab. It's not in the safety or the confines of your office. And you're actually going out there somehow. Ethnography and contextual inquiry are things that you would do early on in the design process, typically before you have a very concrete idea of what it is that you're trying to do. And in ethnography, what you're trying to do is you're trying to immerse yourself in a culture to understand what the culture is doing. And this is a term that actually comes from the anthropology literature and the sociology guys. But rather than think of culture necessarily as being kind of some, different, like, I don't know, island culture or something like that, we're actually talking about different cultures of work. So perhaps, if you think about the work that you do as a grad student or as a researcher, this has a very different language. It has a very different set of processes and practices than if you were to go and work in the accounting department of the university or the human resources department of the university or even the main office of the computer science department, right? All of these different places have a culture of how they do things, what it is that they need to do, and how they think about the work that they have. And in ethnography, what that does, and in an ethnography, your role is basically to articulate what these things are. Often, we see these ethnographies being done for new contexts, for things that we don't have a lot of experience with, but perhaps a very specialized population does. So a very famous set of ethnographies has to do with how teenagers make use of social media, and before that, how they made use of mobile phones and text messaging, right? So it doesn't need to be a very far-fetched culture. Contextual inquiry essentially is an interview method where you actually go into the field and ask people questions in their context. Right? So it's basically an interview method. The difference between an ethnography and a cultural inquiry, to me, is mainly that in an ethnography, you're trying to become a part of it as best you can. In a contextual inquiry, you're trying to stand outside of it but still ask questions while being physically inside of it. Okay? In a deployment study, what you're actually doing is you have a system in hand and you give it to the population that you expect to be using it, or a sample of that population, and you're trying to study what they're going to be, how they're going to be actually using your system, right? So again, if you think about that last method, this is already quite different from a lab study where you're giving people, where you might still be giving people the system. The difference in a deployment study is they are doing it within their work context, whereas in the lab study, you're asking them to come outside of their work context into your work context, right? So the best example I have of this, and this is not exactly HCI research, but I think it'll kind of drive the point home. In Alberta right now, if you decide to have a kid, within about 3 days of your having a baby and bringing the baby home, a health worker will actually come to your home and answer questions in your home. They'll actually come to your door and hang out with you for about an hour or a couple hours. And I think this is absolutely fantastic because there are so many questions that you have that that you're reminded of because you happen to be sitting in your home, right? I'm sitting in my home. I see maybe a pacifier sitting on the ground. And I'm reminded that, actually, should I be having my kid kind of use the pacifier at all? Or should I give him a blanket to use, right? And so there are environmental and contextual cues that help us to come up with questions or things that need to be addressed by this health worker. If you and that is particularly poignant if you contrast that against the case of needing to take the kid, your new baby, basically, to the health worker, right, where you go to the community health clinic and you get checked up there. When you're there, it's very easy to forget all the questions or the things that came up while you were at home, right? Should I be doing this or should I be doing that? Right. So again, that is kind of similar to the distinction between a deployment study and a lab study of a system. Some other methods that you'll see, self-report. So you actually do interviews or questionnaires or surveys, and basically you just ask people questions, right? And you can imagine that there are some weaknesses here, right? Rather than kind of observing what people are doing, you're instead asking people what they're doing, and there are problems where they may not be able to report exactly what it is that they're doing. Some other methods these are a little bit older, but cognitive modeling techniques. Essentially what these do is they try to model kind of user behavior. And the basic idea is that, in fact, I don't even need a user if I know that it takes them, 0.2 seconds to move a mouse cursor, 1,000 pixels. Or it takes them 0.5 seconds to decide on an item from a list of six different items, right? So if they're hitting a menu a drop-down menu and there are six different items in there, I know that it's going to take them a half a second. Because if you know, if you can model people's behavior in this way, what it allows you to do is it allows you to basically say, given an interface design, right, with where I know where the buttons are going to be, I know what the menus are going to look like, so on and so forth, I can actually figure out how long it takes them to go through a certain tasks, certain task in an optimal way, right? So imagine, registering for classes. You know, I know that it takes six clicks to do this. I know that they need to type in this number of letters, so on and so forth. I can actually model what the expected performance will be because I can just add up all of those times. So those are related to sort of keystroke model and GOMS models of interface evaluation. Of course, some work has gone into actually evaluating and trying to figure out what these optimal times are. And then your job as a cognitive modeler for a system is then to just put together these times and actually be able to say, hey, you know, it's going to take about a minute to complete this kind of task with the interface like this. And if I have an interface like this, it's going to take them 45 seconds, right? That helps you make a choice. There's another really cool thing called Fitts' Law, which is essentially a tool that allows you to decide how long it takes somebody to click a target. Depending on the tool that they're using, whether they're using a mouse cursor, a mouse, or touching with their finger or pen pointer. And it's basically, it comes down to some this math model that we can actually figure out. Depends on the interface type, depends on the size of the button, it depends on how far they need to go. And it turns out that this has been useful in a bunch of different user interfaces. So I've introduced to you a bunch of different methods, probably in the order of 6 to 8 or 9 or something like this. But here's the main point. Beyond the fact that this isn't a complete list, it's actually not the point is not which method is best. The point is being able to decide which method is best to use given the question that you are asking, right? So if you are trying to figure out what it is that people's work practices are and what their context is, a lab test doesn't make any sense. Right, if you're trying to design a system for them, what makes sense is actually going and trying to figure out what they're doing, right? Conducting some kind of ethnography or contextual inquiry. Right? If you have two different interface techniques, perhaps a keyboard entry thing and a mouse entry thing, and you're trying to decide which one is better to deploy with your users, going and watching them makes absolutely no sense. What does make some sense is perhaps doing a deployment where you deploy both and see which one works faster, or bringing people in and studying what they're doing. Or maybe even better, using some cognitive modeling to figure out which one's likely to be better, right? So it just depends on the question that you're trying to answer. And the point of this course is not only to expose you to kind of the broad set of techniques that there are out there, but also to help you in deciding, to help you give you the tools to make decisions about which methods are going to be best for your particular context. So this gives you a bit of an answer to the next question, which is, why is it that HCI has so many different methods? All the methods give you a way of thinking about information, about a way of collecting information. It essentially narrows your view of what matters and what doesn't matter, right? It gives you a certain set of techniques to gather information. And it also, in some way, prescribes the analytic method that you're going to take on the data that you collect. So, of course, each one of these methods is going to be valuable in certain situations and also useless in others, right? They all have their inherent limitations and weaknesses. One of the techniques that we use in HCI research is to complement or use multiple methods to complement one another. So I not only use an ethnography, but I perhaps couple that with a survey, right, and provide a better picture. And often a really useful technique is to triangulate. So you actually conduct three different methods and actually get a very, very rich picture of what's going on, right? So a simple way of thinking about this is, if there's a sculpture out there, right, and you take one photo, one perspective is not bad, right? It's useful. It gives you something. But, of course, taking a 3D object and then kind of mapping it onto a 2D space, which is what a photo is doing from only one perspective, is only going to give you one part of the picture, right? If you were to try to really be able to describe what that sculpture was, what you'd want to do is take pictures from multiple angles, because those multiple angles can help you reconstruct what that actual object was. So you would use different methods because, and multiple methods perhaps, because your information requirements differ depending on where you are in that design process. The kind of information that's produced, it differs. So if you have a different need, you want to use a different method. Right? So you want to choose methods that are relevant to the problem that you have. Other reasons why you might actually choose different methods is some are maybe more expensive than others, right? You may have practical constraints that make where some methods actually make no sense. So a deployment study, if you are, suppose you're building a new system to do accounting in the University of Calgary. If that were the case, if you wanted to deploy your system so that it actually touched live data, that would be really, really difficult to do, because IT people would say, well, we can't even be sure if your system actually works, right? If the system doesn't work and it has the potential to screw up all the existing databases, why is it that they would allow you to have that connected in, right? That doesn't make any sense. So those are pragmatic concerns, which would make it such that in this particular case, perhaps, what you would need to do and what you would end up wanting to do is ultimately conducting some sort of laboratory experiment, right? Some lab experiment, or perhaps doing interface inspection, right? It just depends on the situation that you have. So to quickly sum up, this whole course is really about learning a toolbox of evaluation methods for the research and practice of HCI, for the practice of HCI. So we're going to talk about different methods. We're going to compare them and contrast them through the topics, presentations, and the research that each of you will do, and understand how they how each method fits particular interface design and evaluation situations. And what we're going to see is that some methods make sense, again, for some situations, whereas other methods don't. We're actually going to practice a couple of these, some of them in class, and also some of them through the practice of your own project. And you're going to gain some firsthand experience by basically designing, running, and interpreting some kind of study. So today, what we've talked about, why we do evaluation in HCI, a small sample of some of the methods that exist out there, and also the rationale for using different methods and perhaps sometimes using multiple methods. Thanks.